At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. I'm Matt Velasquez, and I'm with Charles Gardner. And first of all, we both have to apologize. We haven't had a podcast in a little bit over 2 weeks. That was not intentional. That was purely a factor of both of us being on the road at the busy point of the season, you know, with Charles covering the Bucks day in and day out, and then with me going on the road and covering Marquette in the midst of the Big East season. So we're gonna try and get back on track, but you know, it's definitely something that we've been trying to get in, and then, you know, recently things got a little tough for me with being stuck currently in New York because of the huge snowstorm. So hopefully we can avoid, you know, acts of God in the future and huge storms like that and get it back going. But it's nice to talk to you again, Charles.
Yeah, great to talk to you, Matt. I know you've been through a lot with travel, and I've been staying dry down south in New Orleans, Houston, Miami, but still a lot of travel. So yeah, we haven't been able to connect. Busy part of the schedule, and a ton of travel during this time of the year for both of us.
Yeah, and so since we've been a little bit out of the loop with the Bucks podcast, how about you recap at least this most recent 4-game swing for the Bucks, which started so promising and kind of crashed and burned a little bit there.
Yeah, they really had a chance for a great road trip. You know, they finished 2-2, winning the first two games in Charlotte and Miami. Two really nice wins on the road. They had lost in Charlotte the first time they were down there earlier this season in a pretty close game, but this time they really dominated the game pretty much and had a great effort, held them 92 points, and then held the Heat to 79 points. And you had to say the Heat was hurting quite a bit with the injuries. Dwayne Wade played, but obviously wasn't 100%. He had the shoulder injuries. He didn't play the next night in Washington. And the Heat, really, the Bucks took advantage. Their two-point guards were out, and Michael Carter-Williams did a great job pressing Tyler Johnson, who was starting that point guard for the Heat. So those were two big wins, and you thought, well, maybe they got a chance here, Houston and New Orleans. They had a couple days in between, then Houston Friday and New Orleans on Saturday night. The game in Houston was competitive, but they just couldn't stop James Harden, who's been on a roll. I see he had a triple-double again against Dallas on Sunday, so he is on a serious roll right now.
And I mean, as he would say, he's cooking.
He's cooking, yeah. He wasn't doing that little thing, Matt. He wasn't doing the stir, so that was kind of nice not to see that. But but he was definitely on par on his game. And the Bucks a couple times reeled them back in, but just could not get back into the game. They got it down to a two-point game at the end on a three-pointer by Middleton, but had to foul, and they lost 102-98. Maybe a little deceiving scoreline there that they weren't quite that close, but and then went to New Orleans, and the game closed through most of three quarters. But again, in both of these last two games, they couldn't defend the three-pointer. Houston went 15 of 44, and New Orleans, even better. I mean, just crazy efficient for the Pelicans, 17 of 31. And they were just throwing them in from everywhere, and you can see the Bucks getting discouraged. Ryan Anderson, who's one of the best dead-eye three-point shooters in the NBA, as soon as I saw him come off the bench, I was like, that's trouble. Yeah. That's trouble for these guys. And sure enough, because he can find his spots on the floor, he finds his spots, and he was burying, I think he was 6 of 11 from three, Matt. So, and then even a guy, Tony Douglas. Now, come on, you're not expecting Tony Douglas to knock you dead from three as he comes off the bench and hits four out of six. So this is a big problem. I wrote about it in Sunday's paper. And the Bucks coaching staff knows. I'm sure this is something they're working on practice today at the Cousins Center. They're going to be working on this three-point defense.
Well, and today, Monday, at the Cousins Center, is going to be, the return of Jason Kidd.
Yes, it is. It'll be Jason coming back, and he's going to coach Tuesday against Orlando at home. And we had that story last week, as you know. So I think everybody's looking forward to having Jason back. And he told me he's excited to be back. Shared some correspondence with him the other day. And he just said he's excited to return. He talked to Gary D'Amato, our columnist, and who had a story in Monday's paper. So I think he made a pretty quick recovery, you got to say. December 21st was that surgery, so basically about a month. And Joe Prunty did a nice job, I believe, coaching in is filling in for Jason. He went 8 wins, 9 losses. I was teasing him the other night. I said, you got a chance for a winning record now, you know. And I think, you know, secretly, he would never say it, but I think secretly, of course, he would have loved to been on the plus 500 side, have that be 9-8 instead of 8-9. But they couldn't get the job done in New Orleans. But obviously, he did a good job. He stressed throughout that the staff was in contact with Kidd. I'm sure they were. But there were also moves that Joe made and the staff made, you know, during games. The one that comes to mind is against Atlanta the other night at home before this road trip started, overtime game against the Hawks. And he left John Henson in to start the overtime period. Henson had been playing well on the defensive end, and that just seemed to serve as a spark for the Bucks. Henson had a big block on Kyle Korver in the overtime. Michael Carter-Williams had blocked Jeff Teague at the end of regulation, and it was a good coaching move, you had to say, that he left Henson in, understanding, you know, how the way he was playing at the time. Not that Greg Monroe was playing poorly, because he wasn't, but that was the right move at the time. So he showed a good sense for in-game situations as well.
Yeah, and you know, reading Gary's column today, which is very good. Everybody should definitely read it. You mentioned that it's, you know, a quick recovery for Kidd, and when you hear the detail of the pictures that the Kidd was showing to Gary, and you know, having the exposed spherical end of his femur showing during surgery and all this stuff, like, yeah, that's some pretty next level stuff.
Yeah, it was definitely a serious surgery, and he went to one of the best doctors in the country, Dr. Sue, the special hospital for surgery in New York. And he's one of the best in the world, I'm sure, at doing this. So he was in good hands. And the Bucks have made it clear too that although he's coming back tomorrow night, he's still going to be monitored by his doctors. So in other words, if they have a West Coast trip coming up, we'll talk about that later. But they have some home games here, but they also still have some road games to get through. And his doctors will monitor him. And I'm sure if there's any problem, they wouldn't hesitate to say, well, you might have to sit out a game here or a game there. It's going to depend on his health. I thought Joe Prunty said it well the other day. He said, well, everybody's been talking about basketball. He said, well, I think one thing that got lost in this was, you know, we're just happy that Coach Kidd is feeling better. And this was a major procedure, as you mentioned, and so the staff is happy that he's recovering from it and feeling better. He was in a lot of pain, obviously, before the surgery.
Yeah, and when it comes to basketball, one of the things that Gary kind of tackled in what he was writing in his column was, you know, kind of what does this mean, you know, and is it too late for, you know, kid coming back, considering that the Bucks are, you know, 19-27, and, you know, Gary said they, you know, they're facing a climb to the Eastern Conference playoffs that has gone from steep to nearly vertical, which is hard to argue considering the number of teams they need to pass to get into the playoff picture. So, you know, so what is the return of Jason Kidd really mean basketball wise to this team?
Yeah, I think it just should serve as a little jolt for sure to the team to see him back on the bench, to see their leader return. And, you know, they've been playing better, you have to say. 2-2 on the trip. They beat Atlanta at home. They beat Chicago at home. The results have been better overall in the last few weeks. So can they keep that up? I know John Henson has said a couple times in the locker room, hey, if we can just get near 500 by the All-Star break, which is coming up soon, Matt, as we know, it's going to be here quickly in a couple weeks. They're 8 under. It seems like every time they make a little move to get 5 under, 4 under, they fall back. And they really need to be closer to the 500 mark. I don't think where they are now, you know, if they're playing 500 ball, obviously they're not going to make the playoffs. If they're going to have to go on a run, and they have a chance to do that. But as you said, they've got a lot of teams ahead of them, so it's not going to be easy. But I think they have a lot of home games, as we're going to discuss here later, after the All-Star break. So I think the team looking at the schedule, that's what John was referring to. Hey, if we can get close to that 500, he said be 500, but I don't think that, you know, they've run out of time to be 500 at the All-Star break. But if they could be 4 under, if they could be, you know, anywhere near it, it gives them at least a hope that to make a strong run in the second half. I remember the year 2009-10, which was the year they won 46 games, and they went 22-8 at the end after the break. They traded for John Salmon, so Bucks fans will remember that, which didn't seem to be a huge trade at the time, but they traded with the Bulls for John Salmon, and he was just, well, he was Kobe Bryant in those 30 games, you know. Now, I don't think you're going to see a similar trade, though, this year. They're obviously still focused on the future. Yes, they want to win. I had a conversation with John Hammond recently, and we're going to have an interview that will be in the paper soon, where the general manager is saying, look, we want to win. We're not rebuilding. He said we wouldn't have gotten Greg Monroe if we were in a, quote, rebuild mode. But he said we're building with our young core. We like them, and we're going to go forward with that. But a little patience may be required, you know, to get where they want to go. And Hammond was talking about the benchmark in the NBA is 50 wins. 50 wins is a benchmark. That's well known in the NBA. If you get to 50, you are considered a championship caliber team, maybe not a championship team, but a team that is going to be in the hunt for that. And that's where the Bucks want to get to. And it doesn't happen immediately. You know, it's 50 is not happening this year, but that's where they're trying to go.
Yeah, the Warriors might hit 50 before February ends.
The Warriors, they're gonna get 50. How about 70 for them? Can they do that, man?
I mean, it's not out of the question yet. But yeah, you mentioned that's some interesting insight from John Hammond. I look forward to reading more of what he said when you get that in the paper this week. Hopefully sooner than later.
You bet. It'll be pretty soon. Next few days, I know that's going to be it.
And so you mentioned the schedule, and you know, I did some looking, some sleuthing, if you will, and if you looked at just the Eastern Conference, by the end of January, the Bucks will have played the fewest home games of any team in the Eastern Conference with 21, and you know, granted the Bucks aren't incredible at home, but as of Monday, they're 12-7 on the road. They're 7-20.
Right.
So, I mean, the difference between those two things, and sure, the home sample size is smaller, but they've demonstrated recently, as you mentioned, you know, they've got home wins over Atlanta, over Chicago. Before that, they beat Dallas at home.
Yes.
You know, They lost to San Antonio at home, but, you know.
Right.
Who doesn't lose to San Antonio?
I mean, yeah, they got smoked in that game. But overall, you're right, Matt. They've done much better at home, and that gives you some optimism when you see how many home games they have. I always remember Andrew Bogut. And I've referenced this before when he was with the Bucks, saying, oh, we always have this backloaded home schedule. But the trouble is, once we get there, are we still in, you know, are we still in the race? And that's kind of exactly the situation this young Bucks team is facing. Can they hang in the race until then? And then obviously they can't go 500 at home. You know, they're really going to have to put on a great home record to be back in it. But one thing that you do notice here over the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about how the East has improved, and it is. But some of these teams are slipping. Charlotte, Orlando, you know, a number of these teams. Now, the Bucks play Orlando on Tuesday, so they've got to think, hey, this is Orlando's 1-9 in their last 10 games.
You got to win that game.
There you go. Charlotte has been slipping, and they got Charlotte on the road. They had lost 9 in a row, or I forget what, you know, they were on a losing streak.
I mean, you look at Miami, too. Miami's 2-8 in their last 10.
Miami is struggling half their team is injured. And so, you know, now Hassan Whiteside, who played well against the Bucks, he gets injured the next night against Washington. So they have really had, I mean, if anybody can say, hey, we haven't had our team, it's been Miami. So again, they have a chance in some of these games, and we'll see. That's where you think, oh, there are all these East teams ahead of them, but there are also some East teams now who are showing some signs of slippage, or some signs that, well, hey, maybe they weren't quite as good as we thought when they went off to this great start. The Bucks are kind of the opposite. They got the terrible start, but do they have enough? My question, Matt, and it keeps recurring, if people that watch the Bucks closely know this, is the bench. The bench is not helping them. You know, they are consistently being outplayed by other teams' benches, whether it was in New Orleans the other night, whether it was in Houston. Houston just ate them up. They changed their lineup, and they brought Terrence Jones off the bench, and they brought, you know, they brought Ty Lawson off the bench, who had been starting, and he did a great job off the bench. So they really need to get some bench production. Sometimes they've had it from Henson. Sometimes they've had it, you know, here and there. But this is something that has been a huge issue. And obviously, here's where the Bucks can claim some injury problems, as they've had Bayless out with sprained ankle twice. They've had Mayo out with the hamstring issue, and now Vasquez has been out on long-term after having surgery on his ankle. So those were all guys they were counting on, whether you think they're the, you know, top bench players or not. Those were guys they were counting on, and that's affected their three-point production. That's affected their bench production. So I think that's an issue to keep watching. The starting group now, the five, has been very stable. They've kept that same starting lineup, the guys we thought were going to start at the beginning of the season. Remember at the beginning of the season, Matt, when they couldn't get all those guys together in the starting lineup?
Oh, yeah.
Well, now they are, and they've been producing.
Well, I mean, you talk about the bench, and, you know, the last game that I was physically at was the win over the Hawks. And you look at that game, Giannis played 50 minutes. MCW played 41 minutes. Henson played 31. Middleton played 45. Monroe played 27, Parker played 37. So you're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, just six guys all
That's
playing.
That's the core six. That's yeah,
the core six playing 27 plus minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody else really played that much. You know,
that's the young core six, and that was a game where Henson was huge off the bench, as we discussed.
Right. Nobody on the bench in that game had more than 15 minutes. I mean, Johnny O'Brien had 13. That was the most off the bench, and, you know, in an overtime game, you know, that's not a huge contribution in terms of minutes. And so those core six guys, you can't play them, you know, 40, 50 minutes. And I mean, Greg, you won't be playing 50 minutes a night because you're not playing overtime every night. But still, like, you can't be pushing those guys like that every single night. You need to have the ability to mix in some other guys and more than just one.
Right. Now, Bayless is back, which has helped on the road trip, just relieves some of that minutes crunch that you're talking about. Excuse me. And O.J. Mayo's still out, but it will be interesting to see if there's any moves made with the bench trade deadline coming up in February or any moves at all. Although I do think, you know, you listen to John Hammond and the management of the Bucks, they're focused. They're not going to make a move for just the present. That's not something they're doing anymore. That was done in the past, and they are going to look toward the future, but they're still trying to win now. But also they're not going to forfeit the future for the now. Let's put it that way. That's not going to happen.
So J.J. Redick's not coming back?
I wouldn't look for J.J. He's too busy draining threes to beat Houston, as he did the other night in overtime. he's found a good fit for himself, though, with the Clippers, I think.
You know, and so we were mentioning the chat, and obviously with the bench, you know, being what it is, and the season being a frustrating one and a difficult one, especially from the fan perspective, and I've seen that. You know, I think if you're looking for reasons to hold on, to have some hope, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned other teams are slipping where the Bucks have had injuries to their bench, but their core guys are still healthy, so that's a reason for hope. But then also, as I mentioned, you know, to this point in the season, the Bucks, you know, by the end of January, they'll play the fewest home games in the Eastern Conference, and then they start February with three more road games.
Yeah, and you don't have to remind me, Matt.
Oh, I know.
Back
I know.
On the road, starting Sunday, I've got a Memphis game this week. This week would have been beautiful without that one little trip down to Memphis. But hey, what are you going to do? Next week will be the last West Coast trip, as you mentioned. That'll be Sacramento, Portland, and Utah. And then after that, Matt, and believe me, I've checked. After that, they have 10 road games left. Only 10.
Yeah.
And for the rest of the entire season. And some of those are Chicago. You know, some of those aren't really tough trips. A couple trips to Atlanta from Milwaukee, that's a pretty easy trip. So their worst travel days will be behind them. They're going to get the All-Star break coming up. As we all know, that's a longer break now. And so the schedule looks much better. They just have to get through that first week of February. And of course, but as we mentioned, they're trying to stay as close to 500 as they can by the All-Star break. They've got those three games on the West Coast, then they come home to play Washington and Boston at home. And so those are all big games that, you know, if they want to start creeping back toward contention for the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. Between February 9th and April 13th, you know, like you said, only 10 road games. That means 20 out of 30 home games in that span. And then the All-Star break's included, so that, you know, it's even more condensed when you actually talk about actual game days.
Correct.
You know, when we subtract that week off of the All-Star break. So,
correct.
You know, they'll get a few situations where teams will come off back-to-backs into Milwaukee, and you can kind of try and take advantage of those situations. And you're playing more Eastern Conference teams, and, you know, when you get wins in those games, those help you more because, you know, basically everybody in the Eastern Conference is ahead of them, you know, except for the Nets and the Sixers. So as long as you're playing basically any other team, you're helping your own cause to move up. And, you know, games against the Wizards and Celtics will be, you know, and Pacers and Pistons, you know, those are four teams, you know, that are right above them in the standings, you know, less than six games between the two. So you have to, if you get wins in those games, it really helps you, you know, in your effort to move up. So, you know, while the Bucks are eight games under 500 right now and five games out of the playoffs, you know, they're not in as dire of a situation as you might seem considering how late in the season it is. You know, of course, if they lose tonight to the Magic and then struggle on the road, I mean, and put themselves in an right. even worse situation before the All-Star break, that changes the situation entirely.
It could be over then. You're right.
It could very much be over then.
Because then you got, right, these 2 weeks are still critical before you get to the break, because if you go 12 under, you know, you're done. If you go into a losing streak here, then Andrew Bogut's prophecy is going to be true, in which he said, you know, well, we get to the All-Star break and we're already out of it. and you know, that's also still a possibility. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting these couple weeks. But what you have to look at is that these are winnable games. They're not playing San Antonio, Dallas, Houston, if you want to put their, you know, they're playing Portland, who's under 500, who's played fairly well recently. Utah's under 500, trying to get a playoff spot in the West, as now those last playoff spots in the West are going to teams that have not made the 500 mark or teams are in contention. Sacramento, you know, so those are all games that you would think should be very competitive games. It's not that the Bucks have had much success in some of those places, particularly Utah, which has been a really tough place for the Bucks to play. But we'll see. And they do have, as you mentioned, so two home games this week, and those two home games right before the break. Those are pretty big games. And as you mentioned, you know, I noticed in doing the preview on Orlando, the Magic is playing at Memphis tonight on Monday night. So they will be on a back-to-back. The Bucks won't. And we all know that sometimes that does have an impact. The Bucks were playing on a back-to-back in New Orleans, and the Pelicans had the rest. So, and, you know, you have to fight through that. The Bucks have played well through most of that game. But that definitely does have an impact in the NBA, or people wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it, you know, it's something that's very obvious just for someone like you who is traveling, you know, on a back-to-back yourself. You know how it is just as a guy who's traveling and writing and covering the games, how taxing that can be. And you're not going out there and running around for 40 minutes.
Thank goodness. If I was going out there, boy, that might be real. That might look real bad. Yeah. So I'll just stay with my headphones and my computer and my writing, my notebook and paper, right, and everything else, and to keep going that way. Yeah. Sometimes I need an extra coffee. I'll say that much, man.
Definitely, you know. So one last thing before we get going, just got to plug, Charles has a chat coming up.
Oh yeah.
You know,
on Tuesday.
What time on Tuesday, Charles?
2 p.m. Tuesday. So we welcome questions, and we'll answer your Bucks questions tomorrow. That'll be the game day with Orlando, so I'll have a little time there in the afternoon before I head down to the Bradley Center.
Yeah, and the link to send Charles your questions is already at jsonline.com. It's very prominent if you go to jsonline.com/bucks. So you can go in there, you can, you know, put your name, send your question, and, you know, then Charles can go in and answer those. And that's one of the reasons why in recent podcasts we haven't jumped out and solicited questions, because we knew that the chat was coming, so we wanted to make sure that we have, you know, enough questions for Charles when he has his chat, you know. And then I think in the future we'll get some questions back in the podcast too, but we wanted to try and find a little bit of a balance there. So definitely make sure to do that.
That'll be great.
All right, and I think that takes us to the end of this edition of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. Again, we apologize for getting a little off track because of our road trips, but we're gonna try and get back on track and get you one a week, you know, as often as we can throughout the season. You can
we'll get one next week, Matt, when I go out west. We'll make a good schedule and figure. I'm not sure where you'll be that first week of February, but we'll get it all set up.
I got a 2-game swing.
You're probably out somewhere.
First Seton Hall on Wednesday, and then Xavier on Saturday. So Newark and Cincinnati, fun times will be had by all.
Exactly.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. You can, as always, find our podcasts in the Bucks blog at jsonline.com/bucks. You can also automatically receive each new edition by subscribing on iTunes or Stitcher. And thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you again soon.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.